Okay, I'm starting recording. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Pony Development Sync for January 10th, 2018. We have another folks here, and I'm going to dive right into some PRs that we have that are marked as needs discussion during sync and are otherwise open. So let's start with 2481. This is a PR from Dippin. It's fix cycle detector memory issue with actor block unblock messages.
Fabulous.
Fabulous.
Okay. So you're inserting a special check on message head being empty for the cycle detector. That's cool. That's nice.
Yeah. It's basically just batching up all the work. The main question is there some assumption in the cycle detector that assumes that it needs to process messages roughly as it's receiving them? I don't think there is.
None at all. It's perfectly happy to defer any number of them for as long as you like.
That's what I'd assume. So this seems to fix the memory growth issue. So that's
cool.
The PR.
This is a lovely change. This looks great.
That's what I thought too. You know what would be even better?
Killing it. Kill. Working on it. Are we recording?
We are, yes.
Okay, cool. Sorry.
We are. Should this get a label for changed or fixed?
I don't think so.
I don't think it matters, does it?
Yeah, right. It's an underlying thing that's going to – some things we'll see a performance improvement, and that's nice, but I don't think it needs anything. I mean, other than it's great, but.
Okay. That has been merged. Next up let's go to the next one that's marked as needs discussion during sync. This is 2472. That's fix pthread condition variable usage for dynamic scheduler scaling.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, the important thing about this one is that comment I made all the way at the bottom or near the bottom at this point from 16 hours ago, summarizing where things stand right now.
Okay, cool.
There's still some hangs.
So this basically, if I'm correct, this basically reverts it so that you could keep working on, it effectively reverts it so that you could keep working on whatever the occasional hang problem is, finding that edge case, yeah?
Yeah, it effectively disables it by default. So far, all the hangs that I understand have been encountered have only been on shutdown. But since we don't know the root cause, I don't know if it's possible if it might happen in other scenarios. It's more of a safety precaution. I have an idea of how to rework it to hopefully avoid the hang issue. But as I mentioned, I don't know how long it's going to take to switch to that and test it out to make sure it actually does resolve the issue.
Okay.
Seems reasonable to me. Yeah? Any objection to merging?
I just want to have a quick glance at the...
It does two other things. Just let you know, aside from reverting it, what it does is it fixes the use of pthread condition variables. I was using them incorrectly. That's the first commit. And the second.
Nearly all uses of pthread condition variables are incorrect, so.
that makes me feel better, but still. the second commit, what it does is it's some edge cases around the way the CONFAC cycle works with dynamic scheduler scaling and trying to avoid some edge cases around that.
That's what the second commit is for. Okay. Yeah, that seems reasonable. And the things you're describing seem like a reasonable approach.
Okay. We have another one that is marked as needs discussion during sync. I'm trying to get through those while we're on sync. This is 2468. Fix byte chunks being sent separately over SSL with write V.
Oh,
Yeah, so my main question here is I'm not clear on whether SSL is a stream-based protocol or a packet-based protocol where you're expected to be able to get your packets with the same boundaries on the other side. I know for TCP, that's not something you're supposed to expect.
And indeed for TLS, it is also not something you expect.
Yep.
Yeah. So I think here, if that's the case, I think here this PR incurs a performance cost to like get closer to meeting that expectation that is not supposed to be expected.
I see. So it's building up a data array. Ouch. No, bad. Oh, my apologies to Epic Eric. I didn't mean to make that sound as horrifying as I just did, but yeah, I agree with Joe. This is not the approach.
I was saying if you want this, you should buffer and head ahead of the ahead of where we're doing the socket handling, and that the socket handling shouldn't add buffering of that sort to TCP, where that I think that would violate my least surprise expectation if I was using something but specifically advertised that it did buffering, you know, like Netty, you know, which provides like wrappers right. for TCP or something, then that would be fine. But for something that's called TCP connection, that would certainly violate my expectation.
Yeah, TLS really doesn't have this. TLS does mess up WriteV because you have to feed everything through in this way, right? There's no, you don't get the kind of massive performance improvements you would get if you're going through OpenSSL. There are other TLS implementations where you can get WriteV-like improvements, but that's a different issue. I'm afraid we don't want this.
Is it basically the same as what I described at the ticket? So we can
it's
just
exactly what you described. There's I have nothing to say other than exactly what you wrote.
Okay, great.
I'm all to say that. I am sadly, personally, intimately familiar with DLS.
Right.
I wish I wasn't, but
all right, Joe. Will you address updating that one?
Yeah.
Okay. Next one that is marked as. Needs discussion during sync, and this is our last PR that has needs discussion during sync. Then we can go back to the top and check out if there are any others that aren't tagged as that. This one is from Stuart. It's 2463 expose outstream rather than standard stream in ENV. I could have sworn I left a comment on this. But apparently I didn't, according to history. Apparently I just dreamed that.
Oh, I see, because of the interface change. That's a good point, Joe. On the other hand, I think he's clearly right.
Yeah, I think so too.
So... I think he's right too. I don't really think this should. I think it's fine for it not to go through the
RFC
process. However, it does break the interface, and I would personally like to hold off merging this until after I do the next release, just because our release process basically goes off of a point off of. Master right now, rather than being something where you cherry pick, and I'd rather get Dippin's thing out without a breaking change in, and then we could put this breaking change in.
I think that sounds reasonable.
So yeah, that's me.
I have to say, I think it's quite reasonable for us to be using interfaces rather than the concrete classes. Wherever possible in the standard library, I do have concerns about would it, are there any cases where that would add potentially performance overhead? But that's a performance overhead, which is, I think, anything that might happen would be mitigated by the much more useful nature of the library, right?
Yeah, I think in this particular case, already we're talking about sending messages to these things.
Yeah.
I can't say I'm worried.
Yeah. Okay. So, what is it? Is it 0.21.3? Is that the one I opened the issue for to release? Yeah. Okay. So, okay. Okay. Let's go back around to the top on these then. Okay. Now here, let me take the sync off of that. Okay. We have Wink, did you update yours to have the thing where it was you said it was causing the problem with assigning directly to the variable? Did you do that yet?
No, not yet. I was working on the other stuff. So
okay. All right. I think 2476, everyone. This is a nice addition that Wink is making to the message U-bench to give it a runtime. He and I have a disagreement as to whether how this should be done, and I think it would be good to get some thought from it. It's a relatively minor thing, but I think it's a potentially interesting point that people could learn from. If people could have a moment, I'm happy to go either way on it. If folks like Wink's approach of having two timers rather than a timer that after once a certain amount of time has elapsed, it doesn't rearm itself. I think that makes sense as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I would agree with that approach, but I was trying to learn how timers worked and how they interacted and particularly how to cancel them. So I chose this approach, which is a little bit not as direct, but I also rationalized it that it would stress the system a little more. I've been chasing down that hang, and I've been looking for things to stress the system. So I thought having more asynchronicity might be more stressful in the system. The other thing that I was thinking as a potential compromise, because I would like to keep that in there, but as I note in my reply that, if people don't want it, then fine, I'll change it. But the other option I was thinking of, we could have both techniques. So I could add another parameter that says after so many ticks or after so many reports, it would stop. And you could choose either technique.
Years and years ago, I read this book, which lived with me more than anything else. It was Writing Solid Code by Steve McConnell. And he says anything you have more than one way to do the same thing, he calls it a candy machine interface and says it's bad. So I'd rather have one way to do it rather than two.
I totally agree with that. But this is also potentially example code for people to say, well, how would I do this? Where's an example of a canceling the timer and such? Now, I totally agree with you in shipping code, but that isn't necessarily the purpose of this. We're trying to stress the system and also show examples. So
yeah, I think it's interesting.
It may be an anti-example from a coding style point of view, but so that's my defense. But I'm willing to do whatever people would like.
I think since it's, I mean, this isn't a package people are using to extend their code. This is literally an example program and a test program, to be honest, as Wink points out. So in the spirit of exercising different paths, funnily enough, I'm not that opposed to a candy machine here. Normally I would jump all over that and agree with Sean
okay,
on this.
Okay, Sylvan, no, go away. Go away. Okay. Don't hear from you. You pick one, not both.
That's fair.
Cut the baby in half. Come on, cut it. No, okay, keep going.
That's it. That's all I had. In terms of whether to do this, whether the right example is to say run n times as opposed to run for n seconds.
I wasn't even thinking it's n times. It's here. I have an inter. I'm supposed to run until X point in the future. Yeah. I can see when X point is the future is each time that I fire and then not arm myself again.
You would want to put a get time now in the notifier and see if the time has transpired.
That was my thought. Yes.
My only feeling on that is polling is the thing I hate the worst. So I was thinking of calculating the time forward to go n times.
That works as well. So long as you use the count variable then. Because it's theoretically possible that you will have missed, hops. That's why the apply on a timer takes the count variable. Normally, pretty much that value should always be one. Sometimes it could be something other than that, where it's had cycle skipped.
Okay. Yeah.
So that could be done as well. Yeah. As a number of times there, but I'm not super strong opinioned on this either way.
I think that this could be a good example of using the count variable, right? The count parameter, right? Like if we're talking about this being example code, maybe using the count parameter is like the right way to go about, demonstrating that like the proper use of it.
I like that theory.
It's a reasonable point.
I'll comment that until the explanation, I wasn't quite sure what the count variable was signifying.
Ah,
the documentation was not clear to me what it was actually counting. I was guessing that maybe it was, misfires, but it wasn't clear to me. So I would agree with that sentiment also.
Cool.
That also sounds then like we should update that little bit of documentation to be more clear.
Yeah.
I agree, yeah.
Timer.
Maybe I just misread it, but I didn't see anything that really indicated what count was.
So what it currently says is called with the number of times the timer has fired since the last time called.
When I read that, I wasn't sure if that meant from the beginning of time or
I agree.
But as you explained it, it's from the last time, right. And it makes more sense.
I think that definitely could stand to have an exposition of exactly what that means, right? That means, for example, if count is two and your timer is firing every 10 milliseconds, then in fact, it's been 20 milliseconds since the last time you fired because one was skipped. I think explicitly saying that is something that could be very helpful. I can see some folks are going to read that and they'll understand what it means. Some folks are going to read it and be like, I think I know what it means. Some folks are going to read it and go, I'm not entirely sure. So I think that definitely could be improved. Yeah.
Could I ask a question? what happens if it's it's only counting whole unit misses? So if you're, if let's say you've got a 10 millisecond interval and you're 15 seconds from the last one, so you're 1.5 ways, I assume it still says one. But if you get if you get 22 milliseconds away, it's going to say two. Is that correct?
Yes, I believe so. Sylvan, did you write this code originally? The stuff that I'm
just looking at it, thinking
that I'm trying to go back into and remember. It looks like Sylvan code.
I suspect you're right.
Okay, so here we go. It's in fire, in timer, right? So we get elapsed. We get count is elapsed divided by interval plus one. So,
Wink's right.
Yep, that what you said is exactly right.
Okay.
In timer.pony, count is if anybody ever wants to take a look, it's on line 100 where it's calculated.
Okay.
I must have written that. Look at that code. It must have been.
a quick related digression. I was a little surprised that you pass a class as the notifier. Why not send a message directly? Why not request that the actor implement a notify interface and have the timer send directly rather than
because not all timer code should be handled asynchronously. This is the same reason pattern in general uses isolated stuff, is to allow both synchronous and asynchronous processing of events. So if you want asynchronous processing, it's super simple to have a delegate that what it does is holds a reference to the actor and passes that along. And the performance impact is basically nothing because you're going to have a call into this thing and forward it on it. It's really straightforward. We could make it actually nothing if we parameterize these things over the type of the notifier as opposed to using a notifier interface. Mm-hmm. But it's so close to free right now with indirect branch prediction that it's hard to justify that. And it is important to have the ability to do some things synchronously.
And it could speculate.
And it can speculate.
Under whose actor is this executing? That was also unclear to me. So here we have this callback.
When you run timers, mm-hmm. the only way to run timers is to send them to some specific timer's actor, right? So you have the apply method over that timer's actor. So your notifier runs in the actor that is doing the eventing. This is the same thing as a PCP notifier or a UDP socket notifier.
Mm-hmm. So it's running under the timer actors.
Yes.
That's it. Yep.
Yeah, well, there's one timer's actor that you can send multiple timer objects to.
Right. So each timer's actor represents a hierarchical timing wheel, and then each timer is some timer on that wheel.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that explains it. Would you be against an extension which would allow you to not have to create the notifier class and send the message directly?
Absolutely against it. It adds a whole other way to do something that's unnecessary, and it'll introduce pattern matching on type in order to figure out how to handle the timer, and that'll be slower than having the indirect branch to dispatch the message. Sorry about that.
Uh-huh.
It would also create the notify pattern with the class is used throughout the standard library as a pattern that once you pick it up in one place should make sense for all of the others, and that would introduce a different approach to doing it, which does have that additional overhead and whatnot. You can create a notifier or you can use an object literal there as well, actually. That implements apply and cancel, so that you don't actually need a class. You can do an object literal and do it, and boom, away you go.
Now,
okay, well, I have to learn some of that stuff. But you know, I happen to be more asynchronous oriented, and having to create another class, yet another class, when all I'm going to do is use that as a trampoline to send a message.
So sometimes
it makes it more difficult for me.
Sometimes you might use it as a trampoline. Sometimes you might not. Like most of, in the case of timer notifies, most of the ones that I write are usually trampolines, but not all of them. Some of them, make some kind of decision based on other stuff first to do it. But in the case of timer notify, normally it's a trampoline. I think most notifiers, I think generally, I mean, every notifier eventually becomes usually does some kind of jumping off, but you know, could have like potentially quite complex logic in there, like particularly like when you TCP the TCP connection notify, for example, usually has a lot of logic in it if you're writing a more complicated program, whereas timer notify those tend to have a much smaller footprint of what you do before you end up sending it off. But I can't think of a case where a notify probably wouldn't have some kind of message send at some point to something else, most of the time, somewhere in it, for at least one of those methods.
Right, I asked the question to start with. That's fine. I understand the philosophy at this point. And if it irks me enough, then I can write my own class, my own program. So. That's fine. Sounds good.
Cool. All right. So we are at the halfway point, which is when we open up for questions or discussion, including issues that you might have open that you want to discuss that were not covered during the first half an hour, or PRs or anything else. So Sylvan, this is a reminder to you, when you're done with this call, you're going to hop on Twitter and you're going to talk with that fellow, because we're already a week behind on that. Okay.
Yes, sir.
All right. Okay. Then beyond that, does anybody have anything they want to go over? Otherwise we will go back to issues and stuff.
I was hoping to have a talk with Benoit on 2466, but he's not available. This is the issue on foreign exceptions and Windows not propagating properly through clone frames, just for the record. But I think without Benoit here, it's not worth going through.
Reasonable. Alrighty. Let's see. Well, anybody got anything else? Otherwise, we're gonna move back to stuff. I'm going to switch over. We did some PRs there. Go through.
Excuse me. I guess I interrupted and we got a little digressed do we want to do a candy interface or do we want to do one or the other on the micro bench?
I thought we'd settled on count, but what does everybody else think?
I think using the count and having an example that shows the proper use of count sounds great.
And so you want me to remove the other timer?
That would be my preference, yes.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm going to switch over to some issues that have need discussion during sync. Sylvan, I'm not going to take the needs discussion during sync off of 267 is another way to say that, probably a more common way. This is a thing that months ago, somebody named Sylvan Klebb said he was going to write up a thing for what needs to be done on this. And then he completely ghosted on it because, like, he moved into a new house or something. So if you could talk to that guy, and he should do it, but not until after he does the Twitter thing, that would be good.
All right.
So that's your reminder on that. Is Benoit here? Let's see. He's not. I think this is the issue that I leave this on to bug Benoit to, yes, okay, he probably hasn't. Let's see. This one, 2317. Okay, we discussed that last time. Let me update that. We discussed that sync.
And so regarding that one, the PR that we just merged regarding the cycle detector and the actor messages should take up any remaining memory issues with this.
This is scheduler block and unblock messages, not actor block and unblock messages to the cycle detector.
Okay, sorry.
Everybody misses the part where I put scheduler in front of it. I'm going to put it in bold this time.
All right. I personally don't think the size matters between the two, but that's
fine. I have seen for myself that it does.
I as someone who's dug a little too much into the pool allocator and how it does things, I know that it has some impact. I just don't think it's a significant impact. But like you said, you guys discussed it last week. I wasn't here, so let's just ignore it and move on.
We have something from November 27th marked as needs discussion during sync. It looks like this was discussed during sync. Joe, you might remember 2380, but it's still tagged as need discussion during sync. I don't think I was around then, but Joe, it looks like you were. Yes, this was discussed. Do we? Oh, okay, I see. We still need to, for the record, when name mingling, blah, blah, blah. This might have been, Sylvan wasn't around. Sylvan, let's talk about 2380 for a minute, perhaps.
Yeah. Having a look. Name mangling for default argument parameter permutation does not sound like a lovely plan. Joe's right.
Yeah, so the remaining question was thinking about, like, whether this, that mangling may be reason enough to say we don't want to do it, but I also wanted to check and see, you know, does this cause, like, type system unsoundness to allow this? That is, to allow a function that has a default argument value be considered a subtype of an interface that does not have that
it argument. Does. That's not good.
Yeah.
Very not good. So funnily enough, this harkens back to a discussion from 2014, which is about what does it mean to do partial application in the presence of default arguments? Because you don't end up with an instance of the method that you partially applied. What you end up with is a new object with an apply method. That new object with an apply method, we could say that it has default arguments, but that's hugely problematic. It's probably not the signature you want. Probably what people want is to say, env tilde exit code, to use Scott's example, should apply the default argument before generating the resulting closure. Unfortunately, this is an excellent example of why not to do that. Because what if you want something where you're gonna supply the exit code? All of a sudden, you couldn't do it. As soon as you say you want to do that, it's going to supply the default exit code, and you're done. You're in trouble. Which is why the decision was made to say, although that's funny. Wait a minute. Exit code doesn't even have a default variable. Is this not the example? Sorry, a default argument. Is this not going the direction I'm thinking it's going? I32 val, I64 val, returning none. Sorry, Joe, can you help me out on this one? I apologize. All of a sudden, this thing is...
Yeah, I'm looking at it here. I'm trying to recall the context. Exit code function is an interface that takes I32 and returns none. And I think maybe this was from a PR. Yeah, that's right. This was from a PR that added a default argument to exit code that didn't end up being added, right?
Okay.
Like, I think it was 2370.
Right. Okay. Nice. Okay. That makes more sense. Phew!
Right.
I was suddenly worried that this was in no way the thing that I was looking at. Okay.
Right.
Cool. Yep, I see it. And indeed, now it makes sense that it's an I32 U64 there because the I32 stays the same, but it takes a quiescent cycles argument to go with it. Okay.
Right.
All right. So, my apologies. Going back to the thing, if exit code were to have a default argument and let's say it took only one, well, actually, it doesn't matter how many it takes. The point is, if you were to always supply the default arguments when building partial application, you would have no way to build a partial application that didn't take the default arguments. So we made the decision to say it was more important to be able to do everything you need to do than it is to say that the a partial application captures all default arguments.
Right.
To be honest, I'm not sure what it looks like in the presence of supplying arguments by name as well as position, named as well as positional arguments. I'm not sure what it looks like to talk about being able to capture some default arguments. Yeah. That sounds like a relatively complex piece of type system work, actually. Not necessarily something not worth investigating, but fairly complex from the type system point of view, to say what is it that we're generating? What's the type of that? Because right now, when we resolve the type, that's how we pick up the default arguments. So we could say that there was some, we could talk about a type system that knew how to do partial application and create a new anonymous type that also captured the full AST for default arguments in the apply method of the partial application. Does that make sense?
Yeah. But I think that even absent that, like as of right now, take away partial application for a second. If you have the signature I-32 returning none, and on an interface, and you have the signature I-32, the second parameter is I-64 with the default value returning none, then basically what
can't be a subtype
here is that he was saying that that type should be a subtype of the interface.
No, it can't be. Yeah.
To him.
Yeah, I see your point. So it's even more complicated than I thought.
Well, I think it's less, right? Because the fundamental question Scott was asking, it doesn't really involve the partial application. It's just a question of whether it can be considered to be a subtype of an inner.
Okay, that you're right. I see your point. Yeah, you're right. Because that question is easy to answer. No.
Right.
Yeah, it's a good point. Yeah. Yeah, okay, you're right. So from a you're absolutely right. From a subtyping point of view, it is simple, which is no, because it's a giant type system hole where you have all the, as you say, every possible permutation of default arguments would have to be a separate name mangling. And even then you're going to run into a little bit of complication on what the implementation looks like. It's a combinatorial explosion on the V table. Yeah, good point.
All right, I'm going to type up a comment that says something to that effect.
Awesome, thank you.
All right. How about we do 2408? Let's look at that. Joe marked it a while ago as needs discussion during sync. This is pattern match claims case to be not matchable, although it should be 2408.
Do we have Matthias here? I don't think we do.
Do we want to put it off till another time when he's here? I thought he was here, but you're right, he's not.
Yeah, I guess we might want to put it off to another time unless anybody has a an insight that they want to share at the moment.
Oh. Wait, that sounded like an insight. Oh.
Didn't
an insight?
Didn't he answer this himself? I'm looking at the AST because he says I-128 and U-128 don't implement add C or sub C, which I didn't realize. They possibly could.
Oh, don't we have another issue for that somewhere?
We do, and I actually have a partial implementation that I never submitted as a PR because I'm bad.
You're good. Stop saying that.
You're bad. Bad no, dog. No biscuit. Bad Joe, no biscuit.
No biscuit until I submit the PR.
But now I'm looking at the... No, but Arg.
Can we blame Intel for this?
Sure. So we're on generic sum. It's demanding it's an integer, that it has integer operations, that it's has the add C and sub C operations. We implement plus safe over X and Y, which says we add safe, add C. Could have done that directly, but that's fine. It's probably a placeholder for something. So by adding the safe ops, it's demanding
This isn't satisfiable, is it? Like his definition.
I8, so it must be some int, and it is, it's I8. I8 implements both integer t and safe ops t, doesn't it?
Right, okay, I think the issue is it implements integer I8, it doesn't implement integer t.
But t, in this case, is I8.
Right, I think maybe the type checker's not seeing that.
It should totally see that. That's F-bounded polymorphism. It should absolutely see that.
Oh, wait, I misread that.
I mean, I agree it should.
So plus safe. Let me have a quick compile because I wonder if it's the underscore. No, it's not.
I mean, even if it is a good reason that this doesn't compile, the error message is bogus, right?
Absolutely.
T-val
it says match type T-val bool val can't match with pattern type T-val bool val, which seems somewhat annoying. So at worst, yeah.
Yeah, I've definitely run into issues myself where the concrete type for a type parameter was being used where it shouldn't. But that was usually in the presence of if type, like where I think just if type is a little bit buggy still.
Okay.
And this is not using if type.
No. It is not. And then the second error is just based on the first one. But I'm particularly concerned when it says match type and pattern type and they're exactly the same type and it says this pattern can never match. It looks like maybe somehow it's losing its definition of T there.
Right. Right, and so when he shows the AST for the operand and the pattern, it's... never mind.
Yeah, that's where I got on that one.
You got to never mind?
Right, so yeah, IA should be a valid subtype of... The issue is, I think that it doesn't know that...
Okay, I can make it compile by doing two things. One is eliminate the demand that it's an int while also giving it an else branch, else error. That seems weird and wrong. How does weird and wrong sound?
Well, let's see. Yeah, so if you add an else branch, that means you're not running through the check for exhaustion.
Absolutely. So, but it doesn't say this pattern can never match.
Right.
It doesn't believe it's got an exhaustive match.
I wonder if something in the exhaustive match code is losing I8's tie to T in this context.
It may well. That's
because if you take that operand AST in that pattern, right, and you ask me if that operand AST is, the pattern AST is a subtype of the operand AST, my answer is that depends on what T is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so if you're losing the link to T. Like it's using the, it's, should it not be using the reified type in this type check, right? Should it just be using T instead of IA as the pattern type?
Yeah, it should. You're absolutely right.
I wonder why it's using I8. Oh, I bet it's because I8 is the first one in the union type. So it's calling it on, because when you said you removed int, right? Int is that union type, right?
It is indeed.
Yeah. So it's the recursive logic in the type checking is running through. Okay, so it says, okay, I've got an intersection type. Let's operate on the first one first to type check there. And then it has to run through everything in the union, and it's getting caught up on the first one in the union, which is I8.
Damn. Okay.
So something about the... So now I'm thinking something about the recursive logic of is subtype is losing that connection to T where it shouldn't be, but I'm not sure how to formulate that in a more productive way.
Yeah, because interestingly, if instead of int, I tell it has to be a U8, it doesn't complain about an unmatchable type, but it does not do exhaustive pattern match.
Yeah.
Which I did not expect.
I wonder what the backtrace looks like on his X match X. I mean, because it... Yeah.
Yeah, that's very odd that it's not figuring out that there's an exhaustive match there, even when it's forced to be U8 in the intersection type over T. It's almost like pattern matching type checking is a little bit tricky.
We have like a couple minutes left before the end of the call. Perhaps we want to summarize that. Anything perhaps on this right now, or leave it as needs discussion during sync? We come back to.
I think we ought to. If it, Joe, if you're up for adding a comment based on what we've discovered today, and then also leave it needs discussion during sync, I think that would be good.
Real quick, I in subtype.c, line 619, I see a to do comment. In is isect sub x.
Indeed, satisfy the interface in aggregate. So what that means is that's if you have an intersection type and you're trying to determine if that intersection type together fulfills some interface.
Instead of individually, okay.
Yeah. Exactly. So that none of the types implement the interface, but if you added them all together, it would.
Okay. So it's not relevant here. Okay.
I don't think so. That's I don't want to swear
bad.
To that.
That's too bad. The best bugs are always the ones where you find a to-do.
Those are the best bugs.
To-do. At least somebody had the foresight, right? All right, sorry. Yeah, I'll write up a short comment.
Awesome, thank you.
All righty. Well then, we're at the end for this time. Sylvan, what are you going to do?
I'm gonna respond to the guy on Twitter and have another look at the finite recursive type aliases, which, by the way, I did flake out on, but then it turned out when I went back to try to do it, we had a discussion about it, and it's... I have significantly less to say than I thought I did, which I now remember after going through this stuff.
Well, remember the purpose of it was to get anything that we could from you so that somebody else could pick it up, because
I will give what I got.
I mean, I think anytime you want to write something like a JSON type or whatever without this,
this is totally solvable. Don't get me wrong. This is not something you can't do.
Yeah, and I think it's something for me, this is one of those things that has to be solved before we do a 1.0, right?
Totally agree.
All you have to do is look at the JSON classes in the standard library to know what sorts of awful, awful, like really bad ergonomics APIs come out of not having this.
Yeah, totally.
Also known as the class that makes Sean want to shoot himself in the head. And Andy, if you ever listen to these, I doubt you do, but Andy, I know you wrote that, and so I apologize in advance for having said that. Not Turley, other Andy.
And here I thought you were going to make him apologize for writing it.
Oh, no. I know Sylvan didn't write that. That doesn't look at all like Sylvan code.
And he was working with what he had.
I know he did. I know he wrote what he had. Oh, I had one thing real quick before we go. I wanted to do a quick poll of Joe. This is going to sound more like you than me, by the way. Okay. A quick poll of whether there would be support and whether I should put the time in for writing it up an RFC to remove the HTTP server from the standard library and separate it out into its own package. My reasoning being that that it doesn't have the greatest in terms of performance on it. I think its existence in some ways would be a detriment towards other people working on HTTP servers. It replaced in the end and reutilized portions of a thing which was written as a example proof of concept of how something could be done. And while it's an improvement over the previous one, in a lot of ways it's still a proof of concept thing. And I think by being in the standard library, people give it more value and gravitas than I think it deserves.
I will also choose to channel Joe here and say, let many flowers bloom. In other words, yeah, I think I would support removing it from the standard library.
Joe?
I disagree channel? Completely. No,
oh, my God.
Just thought it'd be fun. No, I agree.
Cool. Yeah, I think that it predates when we had the RFC process. It was one where I was like, there are probably other things. Like, I think like the JSON library, honestly, as well, I would probably open RFC for. I'm going to go through the standard library. We're going to start with the HTTP and look at stuff where I think that like, it's just stuff where we can pull it out by having the HTTP server and some other stuff that's part of the Pony project in separate repositories. It also forces us, I think, to work more on infrastructure for making it easier for people to use third-party libraries as well.
Discoverability of those libraries.
Yes. Yes. Okay. All right.
That would be a great project for just to inject for one of those CS students on Twitter that was looking for a project, working on a centralized repository for discoverability, at least of Pony packages, would be a cool thing.
Yeah, if it's not on the theoretical side, Sylvan, you want to suggest that when you see if that would be something.
Yep.
Yep. That sounds
it all depends on the interest of the student, right?
Yes. Yes, yes. Okay, all right. We're over. I'm going to thank you, everyone, for coming. I'm going to hit stop recording.
Great.